You are listening to Fantha Tracks.
They love you. You know.
This is Princess Leia Organa. You're listening to Planet Leia.
Permission is granted to land on Planet Leia. Brought to you by Fantatrax. Here are your hosts, Claire Henry and Johanna Nibielios.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Planet Leia. My name is Johanna Nibielius and I'm here together with Claire.
Hello everybody, it's great to be back again talking Star Wars.
Yes, and we have a really exciting title for this week, I Hate Sand, which really says something about what we're going to talk about, because we are going to talk about desert planets. When you think about it, there are quite a few of them in Star Wars. There are more than Tatooine and Jakku out there, and it's time to go explore, and of course explore the women that live on all these planets.
It's quite interesting when we decided to do this, you know, I honestly just thought Tatooine, Jakku, that's it. And then, you know, you forget about all the other bits that are coming in. The reason why we're doing it, isn't it, is because it's all loosely tied into something that we're all very much looking forward to, which we were rudely interrupted in the last episode of Planet Leia. They dropped the trailer for it. It's Kenobi. Yay! And it's coming out on the 27th of May, although obviously it's Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen are going to be part of it. This is going to be the first Star Wars live action series directed by a woman.
But of course, it's not a woman that has never been in Star Wars before. I mean, she has done some episodes of The Mandalorian and she did them very well. So I'm really excited to see what she will bring to the Star Wars galaxy now when she's really on her own.
I mean, when you look at what she's done in The Mandalorian and the other programs that she's been part of, Better Call Saul and American Gods, Deborah Chow is obviously who we're talking about.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe we should actually say not everyone knows exactly who we're talking about.
No, so it's Deborah Chow, and that came about because of course at first Kenobi was meant to be a film and they decided that that wasn't going to be. Kathleen Kennedy shut it all down and then decided to try and increase the viewing on Disney Plus, and lo and behold, we now have Kenobi. It's looking good. It's going to be watching a little Luke Skywalker who's clearly a very adventurous little boy who wants to get away. We're obviously going to be introduced to new characters, and so far we've met a couple. Rupert Friends, he's an Inquisitor, and he will be joined by the Queen's Gambit actress Moses Ingram, and she's going to be playing an Inquisitor called Reva. And she looks cool AF.
This will really be the first big female villain that we will have. I mean, on live action. I mean, you had Asajj Ventress in the Clone Wars, but it will be so interesting now to see like a female villain really take her place on the live action.
And it will be nice to see somebody being evil, bad and ruthless. That's what I'm hoping we're going to see from Reva, really, if I'm honest. I'm looking forward to seeing her chasing out any remaining Jedi and treating them with the contempt that she believes that they desire and they need. It's going to be good to see her doing that. She looks cool. She had an interview with someone and she was saying about a lot of thought has gone into her look.
Especially with her hair.
And I never really thought about it like that before. I don a wig for Princess Leia, stick it on with the buns and stuff. And actually, she's right. It will be nice for girls to go out on Halloween night, trick-or-treating, and be able to use their own hair. It was quite funny. She said that Reva is pretty badass with a badass outfit. Putting on a cape is really exciting and will bring a female villain. And to have a dark side woman is a very significant role. And that's what we're looking for, isn't it?
Yes, it will be so interesting to see her. It is always representation matters. It will be so nice to see the possibility for everyone to recognize that, hey, I'm part of the Star Wars galaxy as well. That galaxy is just as diverse as our own planet is.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. It's brilliant. So, yes, I'm sure we'll find out more in Celebration the panel link went up for Star Wars Celebration and then was quickly withdrawn within 2 minutes of it going up. But thank you, Twitter, for everything, because everybody took screenshots of it. So it looks like there's going to be a panel of some sort for Kenobi. The lucky people who get into that room will then get to see 2 episodes in a room full of Star Wars fans, and that atmosphere is
That will be magic. Yes,
that will be epic. And I'm assuming they'll do what they usually do for all those sort of big panels. All the cast will be there answering questions. Yeah. Whereas you used to get like the trailer, they're actually then going to sit down for an hour and a half and watch Star Wars.
It will be so amazing. I can't get off work in May, but I'm going to be on a medieval fair instead, in a tent. I'm not sure it will be quite the same feeling or atmosphere watching Kenobi on a small screen like my phone or something.
As I said in Good Morning Tatooine this week, I am also not going to Celebration because they very kindly put it in term time. Teachers and children can't get to it. So yep. I've decided to go completely the opposite way to Star Wars, and I'm going to go to Sand in Egypt. So I shall be in Egypt when Celebration is on, so I definitely won't be able to see it.
Which really brings us back to, like, the title of this episode.
Did you like... No, I don't really hate sand. I can't wait to be sitting in on a beach with a cocktail and doing that way. But let's go into our first planet, Tatooine, where there is very little water and, as Anakin says, quite a lot of sand.
There used to be water, as we've learned in Boba Fett, that apparently used to be a watery planet. I'm quite interested in the geology of the planet now. What happened? How did the water just disappear? Since it must have been enough water to first sustain some kind of civilization, and then, it's gone. And you get the Tuscans and Jawas and everything that has to survive just in the desert.
Let's start off with Shmi Skywalker, shall we? I suppose we could tie both of them together, Shmi Skywalker and Aunt Beru.
I really like that they are bringing Bonnie Peace back to Kenobi, that we will actually see Joel Edgerton and Bonnie Peace as Beru and Owen Lars. It's like, yes, bring back all the gold cast.
I know, and it's quite nice in a way, because all the prequel people are like going, yay! And, you know, you're seeing all the bits and pieces coming back. It's a bit like when they had people coming back from the OT. So Shmi, played by a Swedish actress, no less.
Yes, Pernilla August. I mean, she's a great actress. Like, she's one of our biggest actresses. Really got to fame with working with Ingmar Bergman and done all the, like, national stages in Sweden. She's really fun. She's directed as well. The fact that she's internationally known as, like, the mother of Darth Vader is like, that's just a tiny thing she did. One little film.
And in Sweden, you're all going, no, she's done this and she's done that. And then, of course, her character that she played, the mother of all evil people. This is where you come back to when we were talking about, you know, the Book of Boba and everything, you know, all this sort of slaves and where this all ties in. And for her to give her son away and trust that these two characters will look after her son, a big ask, I think. But I think that, you know, she knew that her son was someone special. And as we say, the chosen one, a bit like Mary, mother of Jesus, isn't it?
That was actually pretty interesting, because when Pernilla August did the Shmi, she also, like, played Mary. So yeah. It was like, yeah, you're doing this whole virgin birth and then raising, like, very talented boys. When then you can think about it. She really had that peg for, like, her international thing, like, doing Mary and Shmi. I think Shmi is really interesting. She seems to be quite resigned, really, with her fate. She is a slave. She can't do much about it. The important thing is to raise Anakin and take care of him. She doesn't seem like she herself has any plans for what she can do to free herself.
She's just more concerned about him and his future and the fact that she doesn't necessarily want him to be living the life that she lived, but she's quite happy to do it herself. She's more accepting of it. She is bought by then her husband.
Let's be honest here. I don't think Watto was the worst slave owner. It seems like she has quite a lot of freedom to do what she wants and, like, develop her own social life. And when Anakin says in episode 1, the whole thing, you are always saying that the problem is the people are not helping each other enough. Seems to be that she has a life outside of being a slave. And to be honest, we never see her work for Watto. We don't know what she's doing, actually.
No, that's the thing. It's quite interesting. You know that she's got this sort of house, this room. We know that Anakin works and does tinkering forum and does the pod racing, etc. But we don't really know exactly what she's done. She's a bit of a sort of a mystery. And then obviously her death signifies the change in Anakin, like the major change in Anakin that was always there, wasn't it? The potential was there for this dark side to raise, but obviously, you know, his desire to want to live forever was spurred on really by what he should have done for his mum.
And there, of course, you have in that scene when Anakin, well, first Shmi's that scene and when he's going to the Tusken camp, you of course have the Tusken females there. Their special design, which is quite different from the male Tuskens, which is something we didn't see now with the Book of Boba Fett, where they look very different and where men and women of the Tuskens have very similar costumes. There they try to make like a female version of the Tusken, which I think looks really cool. So I'm a bit sad that they are not there anymore.
Hi, this is Amy Ratcliffe and you're listening to Fantatracks.
And then we move on to Aunt Beru, bless her. Another woman who's quite content with her lot in life, willing to accept another person's child. Clearly they can't have children, or what are they chosen not to, because now they have Luke. And he seems to have come to them at the right point in their lives.
Yes. Beru also seems to like, life is harsh. It's not fun being a moisture farmer, but you can eke out a living. You can make the best of what you have. You can make sure that they don't go hungry, that you have what you need. And Beru doesn't seem to be the type that needs any adventures. She's quite happy out there. I actually think both with Shmi and Beru, I'm very sympathetic to them because they are so close to what, to be honest, most people are like. Most of us are not the kind of like, let's go out on an adventure. Let's go out, save the galaxy. It's my destiny to fly beyond the stars. Most of us are either quite happy with where we are or simply afraid to go out and take that extra step. We don't see a lot of those characters because they, to be honest, they don't make the most interesting stories, and we want to have the heroes and villains. But really, Beru and Shmi are the best representation, I would say, of ordinary galactic citizens.
They're in the background, but they're pivotal to the story. Shmi, if she didn't give Anakin to Qui-Gon, then the Skywalker saga wouldn't have started. If Beru had turned around and said, you know what, I'm not looking after that child. That's way too dangerous. Not a chance. They are pivotal people, but they're just in the background, just doing their thing, just carrying on as normal.
And it must be said, Owen and Beru must have raised Luke in a very good way, because he does turn out as a really good boy.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, everybody moans about him whining a bit, but do you know what? Having got a teenager of my own, they would moan about anything and they would fall out with themselves if they thought they could. I get where Luke is coming from, and she's done a great job with him, and his morals are there, and his ultimate aim is that he's remorseful for things that have happened. That has to come from the upbringing that you've got. The foundations were there, and they were there laid by Beru and Owen, and it'll be interesting to see that in Kenobi.
It'll be really interesting to see how much do they know about the story. I mean, they have met Anakin, of course, in Attack of the Clones, but what really did Obi-Wan say when he came there to Tatooine and said, hey, this is Anakin's boy, take care of him? But what do they really know about
how dangerous and in trouble their lives are actually in? And that's proven, you know, in A New Hope, when unfortunately, you know, the stormtroopers come in searching for the droids and take them out.
But I do think they don't know the full story. For one thing, they wouldn't call him Skywalker if they had known that, you know, his dad is like the big bad in the galaxy. He can kill him. They probably would not have kept the name Skywalker.
What I would think is, that's an unusual name. They're all unusual names.
Anakin, Darth Vader hates sand, so he probably won't go to Tatooine voluntarily.
No, I don't think so. I think we're going to see Vader in some sort of dream.
I really hope they're not going to meet up.
No, they can't, based on what happens in A New Hope.
Well, it's from a certain point of view. When they're talking about, when I left you, I was but the learner. If Obi-Wan still goes on, you're still the learner.
Yeah, actually, do you know what? There's no point in even saying that, because actually, no one's ever really gone, Johanna. That's the thing, isn't it? But let's very quickly just mention, because we can't go out without mentioning some of the characters very quickly from Boba Fett. We've done a big look at them in previous episodes, but I just need to say Pele Motto, and I just need to say Sex with a Jawa. That's it. Gloss over it. No, that's it. Done. We cannot have mentioned Tatooine.
What have been heard cannot be unheard.
Exactly. So we'll just very quickly gloss over that and mention that one. And of course, obviously, Drash and Garsifrip and Fennec. They are great characters, and I look forward to seeing more of them, or not, in the future, as the case may go.
Maybe we should move to the planet that when you first saw it, thought, oh, it's another Tatooine. And of course, that's Jakku.
Interesting, isn't it? I remember watching that trailer in Anaheim. That was 7 years ago.
Yes.
That was 7 years ago because it popped up on my Facebook. I actually tweeted Mark Hamill because my daughter gave Mark Hamill her autograph while we were waiting in line to get his autograph. And we came back at the end and we met him. I tweet him every year just to see if he still got Sophie's autograph. He never actually ever answers the question, but this year he replied, "Give my love to Sophie." My Twitter went mad for about 48 hours, which was quite amusing. And my daughter was exceptionally embarrassed. But yes, I remember watching that thinking, oh my God, it's Tatooine. And it wasn't. It was the desert planet of Jakku. And you get a good insight into Jakku if you read the prequel books to the new trilogy. They're brilliant. It gives all that about how there was this galactic civil war and Jakku had the secret imperial base in there. And it was brilliant, you know, and it's got its own place in the galaxy, hasn't it? And in the Star Wars Skywalker saga.
I remember watching like first, okay, oh, it's back to Tatooine. And yet when it was like, oh, couldn't they have taken something else than a desert planet? But in the end, when you think about it really, shouldn't most planets in the galaxy, I'm not an astronomist or astrophysicist or anything, but shouldn't most planets be either desert or ice, either really close to their suns or really far back? So it's not that strange that we have quite a lot of desert planets.
From what we can gather on the universe and the planets, there's multi-suns, aren't there? So no wonder planets are more desert than anything else. And actually, that probably works out why we have so many desert planets. And of course, when we think about women on Jakku, we can only talk about Rey, granddaughter of the Emperor. That came as a bit of a shock to me, I remember, when I was watching the last film.
Not the least because then the Emperor needs to have a child.
Yeah. And who, honestly, now let's go back to
talking about Java sex, well, that's up there on the creep level.
Yeah, let's talk about Emperor sex as well. I mean, who and why? But to be fair, pretty good looking of the glimpse that we see.
I can see how some women would like be attracted by him. And I mean, power always attracts.
Who knows? But anyway, the spawn of it all came out. It was Rey Skywalker, which is what she named herself, obviously, afterwards. Yeah. She didn't want to take the name of her family, which is quite interesting. Her whole cycle and the whole new trilogy, I know lots of people struggle with that. I know our friend, Paul Naylor, cannot bear it. Cannot bear it. Cannot bear the stuff that's happened on there. But you know what? There's a whole new bunch of people have come to love Star Wars because of the new trilogy. And so many girls are into Star Wars because of Rey, a powerful female lead in one of the biggest blockbusters of all time.
I remember like on Celebration Europe in London. I mean, it was the summer after The Force Awakens had come out. And just going into the convention and just seeing all the little Reys everywhere. Yeah. I mean, there were more Reys than I had ever seen little Leias.
Absolutely. And my daughter was one of them. That was what she wanted for Christmas. And when we went to Celebration in London, that's what she wore the whole weekend. And she was going around having lightsaber fights with other little Reys. And I remember Skellig Michael had a promotion stand there and they had like the Jedi steps. And my friend is a great Luke Skywalker cosplayer. And he was there and all these Reys basically assembled on top there, including Sophie. And it was lovely to see. And I think it was a brave move. I know it upset a lot of people, but you know what? Kathleen Kennedy is unapologetic for it. And I'm quite happy for her to be unapologetic about it. I think it was good. And I am sorry that the backlash to Daisy Ridley happened the way it did. I feel it was uncalled for.
It's always uncalled for to like go after the actors. They are doing their part. I will say I'm not a fan of the sequels. I have never been able to warm up to Rey. It's not what made me enjoy what I saw in the films. But you can't underestimate just how important she was. And it was totally right to have a female lead. It's not her fault that, from my point of view, the story wasn't well developed and there was quite a lot of lacking in it. But that has nothing to do with the character of Rey.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it probably was because it was so disjointed. Mm. It's a shame J.J. Abrams just didn't write it from start to finish.
Actually, I'm the one who prefers The Last Jedi, where J.J. wasn't involved. It didn't have a mastermind above that just said, this is where we're going to start the story, this is where it's going to end. That's the problem. But it has nothing to do with the actors and their performances.
No, exactly. And that's actually what I mean. It didn't have an overarching. It didn't feel to me that it was seamless. Like George Lucas, when he wrote A New Hope, he wrote it and it started at episode 4, but he knew what episode 1, 2, 3 was, and he knew what 4, 5, 6 was. To me, it didn't seem that 7, 8, 9 had that overarching view. And actually what Rian Johnson did for me actually was very brave in a lot of places. And I enjoyed it.
I liked The Last Jedi. That was when I felt it was really interesting and it was a new take. And I would love to see him get his hands on something new in the Star Wars galaxy that's maybe not tied into the main Skywalker saga, because he had something going on there that I thought it would be interesting to explore.
Mm, I agree. And I mean, they still haven't said that he's not doing his trilogy. So, you know, fingers crossed on that one. I would quite like that. Rey, very much a pinnacle character in the new trilogy.
And if we're talking about Jakku as the planet, in a way, they had to go away from Tatooine. Tatooine has become too civilized. It's a working part. On Jakku, we got to see something that is much more barren. I mean, the fact that she has to really scavenge just to get food, don't have that problem on Tatooine. So it's a much more backwater than Tatooine ever was. It's interesting to see how people survive in those kind of environments.
And the harshness of it. And actually, if you think about Rey was left there as a child, she's managed to survive and gets herself through it. And again, turns out all right, doesn't she?
Yes.
You know, her moral compass is a good moral compass, even though given from her background, her family, you know, and the potential that it could be. Whereas the difference for Luke is that he had the upbringing from Beru and Owen. She basically did it on her own. And she made choices that were good choices. That's quite an interesting one.
Hi, this is Vanessa Marshall, and you're listening to Fantha Tracks.
So our next desert planet, Jeddah. I just love Rogue One.
Yes, who doesn't?
It's an interesting one, you know, talking about, you were saying about Tatooine. So Jeddah was a desert moon frosted with a permanent winter and was home to one of the first civilizations to explore the nature of the Force. And it once was important to the Jedi Order. And it's now a holy site for, well, it was a holy site for pilgrims across the galaxy. We see it at the point of time, obviously, where, and if you've read the book, understand why Jeddah is so important to the Death Star, where the kyber crystals come in. We come into it at that point, and it's brilliant. And again, the whole crossover, where you see Walrus Man.
We see the scum of the galaxy. They show up even on the sacred planets.
Yeah, exactly. Always having a good look around. And women from Jeddah, not many. But there is one of note, and her name is, and I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong, Huka Silu. For anyone who's going, what and who on earth is she? She's the woman that when they're having the insurgents in the city and Felicity Kendall, that's showing my age. You wouldn't know what I'm talking about there, but anyone in English does. But when she picks up the little girl and saves her from being killed and shot at and runs away, the mum is Huka Silu. I had the pleasure of meeting the actress Sheena Nagai, who played Huka at my local Comic Con. It was her first interview. I think it was a nice introduction to meeting Star Wars fans. So sit back, relax, and have a listen to me chatting to Sheena Nagai at Comic Con in Coventry. I'm here at Coventry Comic Con, called CovCon, and I'm here with Sheena, who is doing your first Comic Con, is that correct?
Yes, I'm here for the first time, and I work for the Comic Con in the United States, but not as a signer.
Okay, and can you tell everybody who's listening what role you've played in a Star Wars film?
Sure, yes, I work for the Rogue One and I played as a Fuika Shiryu.
What was her role in the film? Where do we see you in the film?
Oh, the scene is in the maybe first half an hour, I think. And there was a battlefield, and there's one lost child, and I was a mother of her, so I was looking for her, and then I grabbed her from the actor Felicity Jones.
Yes, so that's the one where they're in the battle scene, and she scoops her up,
yeah,
saves her, and then we don't know what happens to you then afterwards, because Felicity Jones, she walks off, and she's all right, and then the whole building collapses.
I know.
Do you know what happened to you?
I actually don't know, but I hope we are fine, you know, and that our characters, like, I mean.
You could come back then in the next one, you know.
No, I know. I'd like to come back with her, you know.
do like another one in a couple of years'
time.
That
would be fantastic, because that was such a fun experience, and I'd like to work for that again. And then the Felicity Jones, she was fantastic. She was so kind, and I'd like to see her. I know she's filming another film, so I would like to, work
with
her again.
She comes across as a really nice person.
No, yes, she is. Fantastic. She's very natural, not like I'm the actor. She's very natural, but she's a very good actress as well, and fantastic actress.
So did you know that Gareth Edwards, who wrote and directed Rogue One, is actually from here?
Oh!
This city, yes. The city that you're in.
No, I didn't know that. Wow.
Yeah. So he's from a little town. So we're in Coventry at the minute, and he's from a little town just a mile up the road. Well, maybe not a mile, maybe about 10 miles, but called Nuneaton. Mm-hmm. And this is where he's from. This is his home ground.
Right.
So I'm looking for him to see if he's going to turn up, but I'm not sure.
You have to let me know
if he's here. If you spot him, you send him to me, and if I spot him, I'll send him to you.
Yes, definitely. Oh my God, that would be great.
What made you decide that you're going to do comic cons over here?
Well, my agent Matt, he actually told me that he wanted me to come.
Yeah,
to do the first Comic Con, because he's from here, so I think for him is
it's an easy one to do.
And also, like, for he live here, so he knows about this Comic Con, and he think it's quite great for me to come. So,
and how's the reaction been today? Have people been friendly?
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping, because I live literally 200 meters from here. I could throw a stone from my house to here.
Yeah.
Have you found everybody welcoming? And
yeah, it's people are very nice, and they are very enthusiastic about the shows, and many people like Doctor Who and Rogue One and also other films that I was in, so it's quite fun
so
to talk.
You've had a great reception.
Yes, definitely, yeah.
Well, look, thank you very much for being on Panther Tracks today and coming to Coventry Comic Con. It's been brilliant.
Coventry is nice, but I hope I get to see around there too.
Absolutely. I can recommend the pub down the road. It's very nice.
Okay. This is my first time coming to Coventry, so yes, it's quite exciting.
Listen, on behalf of the Panther Tracks, thank you very much for speaking to us today.
Thank you.
So when you hear the interview there, you know, even a small insignificant character like that, they get the background story. I think that's the attention to detail that is needed, isn't it?
That is what makes it a whole living world. Like, you have all these characters, and that's why you always find something new in this wonderful galaxy to find about and learn. And then you get the connections, which is really the interesting part. And I must say, Jedi, I really like Jedi, the whole background scenes with all the masses of people, so many interesting costumes. Too bad we can't go there anymore unless there is something going on in the prequel time area.
You never know, it could come back again. And I mean, the story and the link with Jyn in there and Cassian, perhaps we could see it in Andor. We might be there because it was filmed up in a beach resort in the north of England. You never know. We could be going back to another desert planet again, and it could be Jedha. You know, I'm making guesses again, but interesting.
And it is so interesting just to see if they can reuse some of the costumes and things. I mean, that is the fascinating thing to see all these reused costumes that have been like, hey, that person was in that film, but then you were on another planet, and then you can start thinking about how did they end up there.
Yeah.
And for example, several of the characters in the background in Jeddah, you can see them on Solo as well.
Exactly. So, and that leads us quite nicely into Savarine and Solo, doesn't it? Tell everybody why you love Savarine.
I love Enfys Nest. I really like Solo as a film, but Enfys Nest is like, oh, that was such a cool character. First you think, oh, it's another male character. But when she removes her helmet, like, yes, it's a woman. And not just a woman, it's a very young woman.
Yeah.
Basically a teenager. And then it turns out, no, it's a matriarchy. She has inherited her role from her mother. And it's like, yes, I love that costume. I have a half done costume. I need to finish it someday, but I don't dare to cut into, like, I have the whole helmet in fiberglass and I don't dare cut into it.
That's a brave thing. I mean, it must be a very complicated costume to make.
Yes, I did a half-assed version of it for Chicago, since that was when it had come out, and it was rushed, so basically I need to go back and redo most of the things because I really want to make it good.
She's a great character, isn't she? You know, as we said before, we are looking for a storyline, aren't we, around those characters, those girls and women that we met in Solo. And it would be interesting to see, you know, what this Cloud Rider swoop gang do and why they're there and what's their link
to the rebellion.
Yeah, because there is obviously something, you know, it is very much hinted at, isn't it?
To be honest, Solo didn't do well as a Star Wars film because there was so much potential to go on to really get a Solo trilogy. I don't blame the film. I blame the film in any way because the film is so fun. It's pure fun.
At that point, yes, there was too much Star Wars.
And it went up against Avengers. And I mean, there were hardly any advertising. I mean, that is one where I feel like Disney really tanked the film themselves.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that was a foolish move. They should have left it and they should have waited and done it as they did for Rogue One and all the other ones. They should have waited and done it as a December release. It was, what, only about 4 or 5 months after The Last Jedi, wasn't it?
Yes, it was in May.
And it is a real shame because actually in that film, there are some great female characters in it. And Enfys Nest, absolutely played by Erin Kellerman, one of the best.
Oh, she's also a lovely person. I mean, I just ran into her in Chicago, but oh, she was such a wonderful person.
And she's very friendly, isn't she? She was happy to talk to anybody, wasn't she?
Yeah. I was having a photo up with her and I was like, it was just from the panel for...
I think it must have been the Rise of Skywalker.
Rise of Skywalker, yes. Yeah. So, and I had my photo, so like, I had to run and I was like throwing myself into the photo booth because they were closing it in, and I get there and everything is in total disorder. I have a handbag, like, and she really, I should help you to like get in order so we can have a photo. And then I don't realize I have lost actually quite a big chunk of the costume on the floor. So yeah, that happened. That rush from...
You got your photograph with her.
I got my photo with her. It's not one that I'm proud to show because, to be honest, I look like I've just been running through a whole convention center and lost my half my costume. But she was a really lovely person and she was really nice and she thought it was so funny that there were people there who are dressing up as a character. So I really liked her.
And I know she's not opposed to bringing back the character, and it would be quite good to see because she's got the potential, hasn't she? We've got this warrior that could be, you know, potentially have another break-off TV series if we so wish and desire. And it would be good to do that for the new trilogy to have their breakout series.
I definitely see that there is potential. I mean, now we are getting Kenobi, we're getting Andor as well for that era between the Republic and you have the Empire, but it's obvious that the Empire is not unopposed. And to be honest, it's quite fun to have all these stories set in the underworld where you have all these murky characters. Just like we love the Mandalorian and Boba Fett, there are so many similar characters that you can do a whole story of for the early Empire.
For everything in one location, daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds, bookmark FanthaTracks.com. For Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
Finally, Geonosis.
Which is really the rockiest planet of them all. So it's not just a sand desert, it's a rocky desert.
This is the one that I actually forgot about. I didn't really think was a desert planet, but actually, according to StarWars.com, it is. It's classed as a desert planet. It's less than a parsec away from Tatooine. It's a ringed planet, which is beyond the borders of the Galactic Republic. It's harsh and a rocky desert. And the creatures that there are, well, basically what would happen if the world was blown up and we had a nuclear war. They always said that cockroaches, etc., would survive. And that's basically what we find in Geonosis. Again, not really many female characters to note.
But if you look at the insects and beehives and everything, most of them are like workers and soldiers. But then you have the big queen in the middle, and you have that on Geonosis as well.
Exactly. And that is Carina the Great. What a fantastic name.
Yeah. It's quite a common Swedish name. No one would like say anything or something. Hey, Carina. Yeah, I know quite a few Carina, actually.
Oh, do you? You see, I've never heard of that name before until I was having a good old look at it. And again, she's basically this leader that dwells in the catacombs, but she's laying the eggs. She controls the army of drones, gives them the orders, controls Poggle the Lesser.
Which is an even better name. And now when you understand it, like, you have the Great Queen and then you have the Lesser, because I've always loved the name Poggle the Lesser.
And that's why it happens, and it's quite good, actually, isn't it? You know, there's the woman. I'm great. Do you know what? You're the lesser of us. Clear all. The Jedi follow Poggle and find Carina the Great in charge of Poggle the Lesser. And again, I mean, that is a whirlwind tour of desert planets in Star Wars and taking a good look at the female characters that are around them. But I'm so glad that this is what we decided to do with the podcast. Yeah.
You find all these small, interesting stories. And as I said, that is the diversity of the Star Wars universe that makes it so fantastic. Which is great, because even if you don't like everything in the Star Wars galaxy, there is always so much that you can love.
There's something for everyone. You take from it what you want and what you need.
I would like to ask you, Claire, like, now we've gone through all these desert planets, which one would you have liked to live on?
You've caught me on the spot now. I always believed if I ever lived in the Star Wars galaxy, I'd be a Jedi Knight. So I'm going to say that even though I know it's fate, I would like to live on Jedha. I can see myself there living a life as a Jedi Knight, traveling there and doing the pilgrimages, you know, going and picking my kyber crystal and making my lightsaber and all that sort of stuff. I'm going to go Jedha. That's where I'm going to go for. Where are you going to go for?
I would actually also go for Jedha, but not because I think that I would be a Jedi, but I love the atmosphere of Jedha, even if it was like under very harsh imperial control. And there must have been so much learning and like discussions, like quite a philosophical planet when you have that temple and discovering everything about the Force. Even if I'm not a Force user, I think there would have been so much interesting going on. Otherwise, it would probably be Severine, because they have an ocean as well. It's not just sand.
And actually, maybe it's turning into Tatooine or Jedha or Jakku. Mm. It's not quite at that stage yet. Mm. I'm sticking to my guns. I'm going to go for Jedha. But if I was in a party mood, I probably would do Pisana and join the Aki Aki.
Oh, yeah.
And go and have a rave at Coachella in the sand in the desert, I think that's probably where I'd like to go.
I would probably avoid Geonosis. I love the nature, it's beautiful, but it's a bit too many insects there.
Oh no, definitely not. No, I'm not great at, you know, cockroaches. I'm not scared of them. Even looking at those scenes in Geonosis made me send shivers down my spine. No, definitely not. Not my planet at all. No. I'm going with Jedha. I'm going with the and the learning. And actually, I just really want to know how I can make a pink lightsaber.
And I want to go and to swim in the ocean of Severine.
And on that note, I think we draw this episode to a close. I'm looking forward to next episode. That's going to be...
Oh, that will be Kenobi heavy.
I think it could be Kenobi heavy simply because our next episode, everybody, will be on the 10th of June, and that will be about 10 days after the celebration. So we'll take a look at what's happened in celebration, the big announcements. We will have watched Kenobi by then. We'll be three episodes into it. Let's see if Reva is going to...
As cool as we want her to be.
As cool as we want her to be. And Mother Deborah Chow has made the impact that all of us are hoping for, aren't we? Thank you very much, Johanna, for tonight. It's been great fun, hasn't it,
Leah? Thank you. Yes, it's always fun talking to you.
Thank you to listening to Planet Leia. And if you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free FanthaTracks app through the App Store and follow us on your mobile device. You can also reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. I mean, you could, if you wanted to tell us which desert planets you'd like to live at or which desert females that you think are really cool. Share those opinions with us. And don't forget, of course, to comment, like, share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks. And be sure to subscribe, leave a review on Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro and our Planet Leia opening music, and to Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. Remember to tune in to Good Morning Tatooine live Sunday evenings, 9 p.m. If you missed this week's one, you missed an exceptional guest talking about handbags, i.e. me. Don't forget, we're on at 9 p.m. UK time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on Facebook and YouTube. Check out FanthaTracks Radios on Fridays at 7 p.m. UK time for new episodes of Fantha Down Under, Planet Leia, Desert Planet Discs, Start Your Engines and Cannon Fodder. And make sure every Tuesday at 7 p.m. UK time you tune in for your weekly episode of Making Tracks. So for now, from Johanna and I, thanks ever so much, and we'll see you soon. May the Force be with you.
Coming up next on Fantha Tracks Radio, it's Making Tracks.
You've been talking about handbags. You know, I have a bit of an existential crisis since I have worn out all my Star Wars handbags except for my Han Solo one. I should have gone to Celebration to buy a new one, and now I'm not going there.
I mean, listeners, if you listen to this outro, yes, we are now talking about absolutely the most important thing in the world, which is handbags. My handle fell off my Loungefly Star Wars R2D2. Yeah. You know that one that I had? Yeah. My bowling bag.
I had the one with the X-Wings and the roses and everything.
Oh, yes. That's lovely.
And you can't see the print anymore. It was worn out. And for my Heroes and Villains Rebels, that one wasn't such a good quality because it's actually, the handle fell off and like it had lost some of the hardware like the first time I wore it. And yeah.
I bought in Chicago Heroes and Villains Leia Endor one. As much as it looks great, it's absolutely impractical. Doesn't fit my phone, my purse, doesn't fit all the essential things in it. And now that you have to have your own shopping bags, well, you have to have some of them in there in case you forget it. I'm gutted. And the Vera Bradley that's being released is only being released in America.
Of course it is. I mean, that's why I always stock up on handbags at Celebration, and now I'm not getting there. So, yeah.
But the prices are astronomical for us.
Yeah.
This is the pleading listeners. If you hear this, please help us. Help us, Planet Leia listeners. You're our only hope.
We need a handbag.
We need a handbag.